On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Every mother is a daughter, true. But there is churn and change between generations, and especially today's generations with careers and mommy wars and women torn between home and work. Some things are constant and passed down from mother to daughter. Some change, some are lost. Pediatrician and writer Perry Klass and her 77-year-old mother Sheila Solomon Klass sat down to capture what's constant and what's changed in their own lives as mothers and daughters, with each other, with children, with work and men. It's a great exchange. Up next on Point, they join us with their book, Every Mother is a Daughter, The Never-Ending Quest for Success, Inner Peace, and a Really Clean Kitchen. First, from Kansas City, Missouri, I'm joined by Perry Klass, practicing pediatrician and associate professor at Boston University School of Medicine, prolific author and novelist, and mother of three. Her new book, which she wrote with her mom, is Every Mother is a Daughter, The Never-Ending Quest for Success, Inner Peace, and a Really Clean Kitchen. Perry Klass, thanks so much for being with us.
I'm so happy to be here.
And with us from Kansas City is Perry's mother and co-author, Sheila Solomon Klass, professor emerita of English at Manhattan Community College in New York City, where she taught creative writing, has taught creative writing for 40 years. She is also the mother of three and author of 16 novels for adults and children, including In a Cold Open Field. She co-authored Every Mother is a Daughter. Sheila Solomon Klass, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I'm delighted, and I'm so happy to be a mother.
Bravo, and why not? Here we are almost on the eve of Mother's Day, and you've described these intricacies in a book that's kind of a back-and-forth weave of perspectives from each of you. Perry, let's dive in with you. You've both written tons. When did it occur to you to write about each other, your relationship, mothers, daughters? Why?
Well, after my father died 5 years ago, I found I was writing about him and my memories, and it was a way of trying to keep him with me. Yeah. But I really missed his voice. My father liked to talk and tell stories. He was a professor. He liked the podium. And I kept waiting for my father's voice to interrupt me and say, "That's not how it happened, Perry," or "That reminds me of a much better story," or "You're missing the point," or... And so I began to think about writing with my mother, who's a writer, who's a good storyteller. And I asked myself, how could we write in a way that got both our voices in there and acknowledged that this is really both our stories?
Sheila Solomon Klass, your daughter's sitting next to you there. When you imagined long ago having children, having a daughter, is this what you pictured? Perry Klass?
I don't think so. I believe, and my husband also believed, that, you know, our children should do and be what they wanted to. So I never consciously pushed Perry to be a writer.
And as a mother, as a woman, do you feel like this is a new generation version of me as you sit and look at her? Or is this something, you know, what fascinated me in part in your book is what's constant and what changes between generations. Is this the woman you expected to have as a daughter?
It isn't, but it's a woman that delights me because it seems to me that she has many more opportunities to be and to do exactly what she wants, which is what I really longed for.
And Perry, how about you? Do you see yourself living in your mother's footsteps, in opposition to what you learned and saw in her model? Is it kind of your variation on her theme? How do you describe it?
Well, the interesting thing to me is that my profile, the profile of my life, is actually awfully similar to my mother's, which isn't true for many of my friends. I have so many friends who say my mother has no understanding of how I live, of what I have to balance. My mother has a perfect understanding of it. I'm a pediatrician. She was a college professor. We each had three children. This bearded academic guy. We live in very similar ways. We even travel in similar ways. I'm substantially less stingy than she is because, you know, she's a depression baby and they didn't tell her when the depression ended. But in many, many ways, our lives are so similar and our interests are so similar. We both have always written books around the edges. She says she didn't push me to be a writer, but she pushes constantly. She pushes everyone she knows, her students, her children. She believes you've got a great book in you and that your life would be richer and happier if you tried to write it. And she cares passionately about writing and people's voices. But we started out from such completely different places that when we sat down to write this book, I was fascinated by the question of how she invented this life, which I then only had to learn to do from watching her.
What do you mean completely different places? As you say, there are many similarities in your life. So how did you begin here when you're, what, in your late 40s? Your mom is in her late 70s. How did you begin in such different places then?
Oh, you know, I'm a very good girl. I grew up in the suburbs. I went to school. I got good grades like I was supposed to. I went to college like I was supposed to. I went to medical school. What could be better? You know, I have a life that, even though I guess you could say I was a difficult and obnoxious adolescent at times, basically I kept on bringing home the things I was supposed to bring home. And this is not a complaint. Yeah. I like my life, but I had their support. They were paying the bills. They were cheering.
Sounds like we lost Perry for a minute there. I don't know if Sheila's with us or not.
Looks yes, like we, here I am.
Oh, good. Listen, good,
I'm
good.
Listening
oh, you're back.
Avidly.
Good. I bet you are. Perry describes herself as a very good girl there and growing up in that rather comfortable circumstances, you teaching, your husband a professor and anthropologist. You had very different time coming up, depression time, and in your own way kind of a hellraiser, getting out early and going to work early.
Well, Perry glamorizes me too much. I didn't invent what I became. I think I stumbled upon it. I came from a very unhappy, very poor home during the Depression. I mean, really poor. My parents tried very hard, but life was difficult and not happy. And the thing I remember, I've thought about this a lot, and I thought about it while we wrote the book particularly. I knew very early in my life that I had to get out of that environment because it was so miserable. Nobody was happy. Nobody took joy in life. And I finished high school, and college was free if you passed the Brooklyn College entry exam. And I passed it, and I said to my parents, I want to go to college. And they said, no, we need your salary. And besides, my mother said, you're already too smart and you have a big mouth. No one will marry you.
Sheila, I wish you'd do us a favor. At the top of chapter 2, Whistler's Mother and Mine, there's a wonderful passage. I wonder if you might read it for us.
I'd be delighted to. In May 1939, in the seventh grade at PS 16 in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, we wrote My Mother compositions for Mother's Day. A copy of Whistler's Mother, tacked up in the classroom, made me feel this was a lovely holiday, but somehow not Jewish. Whistler's mother sat resting. She looked kind of old and wore a funny lace doily on her head. His mother looked as if she never yelled. My mother yelled all the time. She never sat. I quickly figured out the saintly portrayal the teacher required for an A, and I wrote it. On the Friday before Mother's Day, I crumpled up the fiction and threw it away after school, not daring to bring it home. My older sister, my kid brother, and I, with help from an aunt, raised the small sum necessary to buy a geranium plant as a mama's reward for being our mother, knowing she would be secretly pleased, but would scold us for wasting the money. That was the bittersweet way she received all offerings. Mama never complimented us, nor did she enjoy us. She was afraid of putting a Kenahara on a child. If she admitted to some beauty or rare quality or success, she would challenge fate and summon the evil eye. I spent my childhood wishing I had a nicer mother.
Sheila Solomon Class, reading from the book she wrote with her daughter, Every Mother is a Daughter. Perry Class, your mom raised you in some ways in opposition to that. As you say, it was pretty good going. You had adolescence like anybody else, but pretty smooth. And yet, your mom reading that reminds us many daughters have very difficult relationships with their mothers.
Well, you know, in some ways, whether you live your life trying for her approval or whether you live your life in opposition to her, one of the things I realized writing this book is that in either case, your mother is shaping you. She's shaping the way you're bringing up your children, whether you're trying to do it the way she did or you're trying to do anything but. You're still reacting to her. You're still kind of going through each day as her daughter, and you don't leave that identity behind.
Janice is calling from Arlington, Massachusetts. Hi, Janice. You're on the air.
Good morning. I just wanted to say that about 3 days ago, I finished reading the book. Perry and her mom came to our congregation to do a little reading, and I bought the book there and have loved it. I had a very close relationship with my mother, who died a year ago, and the back and forth that the two authors have in their book is very similar to the way my mother and I every day would exchange emails, and we would keep running commentaries. I just wanted to say that it's a fabulous book, and I really appreciated them writing it.
And did you, in that, do you see the rhythm of your own? You say you see it in the email correspondence with your mom. Did that support you through those years? How are you living without it?
Oh, it's very hard to live without it. I do still have them. I saved them. I've even saved my mother's messages on my cell phone that I can't quite come to delete them yet. But I go back and read them, and just reading the book was kind of solace for me.
Yeah, we can hear it. Janice, thanks very much for your call. Karen's calling from Waverly, Iowa. Hi, Karen. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to tell you, first of all, that I'm familiar with Perry because of her work as a knitter. I don't know if she talked about that, but she's a fabulous knitter.
Yes, she does. The third subtitle here is, beneath all the rest, is recipes and knitting patterns included. So it's right in there.
Yes. What I wanted to say is I have a lovely 11-year-old daughter, and she's named after my grandma and my mom. And what I tell her is she can have, you know, college degrees and have all sorts of accomplishments, but if she is not kind to the people that she comes into contact with, I will feel like a failure. And that's what I learned from my mother. I have never seen my mother be rude to anyone. And, of course, my mother has gotten bad service, and, you know, she's gotten the bad end of the stick just like everybody else, but I have never seen her be unkind or rude to anyone.
But kindness as a habit is a pretty terrific thing to pass on. Karen, thanks for your call. Sheila, Solomon Class, what did you most want to pass on to Perry? Did you think about it? What do you hope you passed on to her?
Well, one of the things that I passed on to her, and I wanted very much to do it, was a great love of reading, of literature, and I have to admit, of writing, though I didn't urge her to be a writer. And, of course, I also wanted very much to have her love life and enjoy it and recognize all of the rewards that life gives one, particularly when one has children, because my mother got no pleasure at all from her children. I have had enormous pleasure from my children, a sinful amount of pleasure. And I think Perry absolutely derives that same pleasure with her children.
But Perry, it does. I'm sorry, Sheila, excuse me.
No, it gives me great joy. Yeah. Sorry.
But Perry, you're by no means a ditto of your mom. You describe very different housekeeping habits, among other things here. Did you feel, you know, you chip off the old block in some ways, but very much not so in others?
Well, absolutely. And I would like to I'd like to defend myself by saying my mother is someone who can't leave a dish in the sink overnight or a water glass, not in her sink, not in my sink, not in your sink if she knows it's there. I would like to argue that my own absolutely reliable ability to leave dishes in the sink overnight, not to mention my general slipshod housekeeping, which she complains about at length in the book.
Comfortable housekeeping, let's call it.
Comfortable, yeah. That in some ways I have perhaps been freed from some of the demons that drive her, that her own mother installed or instilled.
Yeah.
But it is true that she did communicate this sense that you do the pleasure that you get from your own children, the pleasure that you get from writing. And when we were kids and there were three of us and my mother was a full-time college professor, she got up 2 hours early every morning to write. And we woke up every morning, I know this is going to date me, to the sound of her typewriter keys.
Wow.
But we all became writers because there was something so wonderful happening between my mother and her typewriter that it dragged her out of bed early or it kept her up late. And she and my father, who was an anthropologist, they did both communicate this sense that finding things in life that fascinate you and give you joy, that's what your life should be about. That's what makes it worth working hard or juggling or structuring sort of a complicated life for a couple. It's because you've found the things that really thrill you, excite you, fascinate you, and that's what makes it all worthwhile.
I want to come to that issue of careers. Of course, the Mommy Wars theme has been out there for years now and heated up surprisingly again in recent times. But there's a wonderful reading you do about this issue of daily living and keeping house and getting ready for a party here that you write as a kind of a duet back and forth that brings beautifully into focus that tension that can be there. Well, let's just hear it. If you could read, I think this is page 129, some of this where Sheila is watching as Perry's household gets ready to entertain. Could you read some of that for us?
Sure. Sometimes I tell myself that really I am a compulsively neat person fighting her destiny. When I do things, I tend to do them somewhat obsessionally. I am someone who needs to read two newspapers cover to cover every night before bed, no matter how late it is and how tired I am, and that's why those piles of newspapers sit in my living room. I have to save the papers when I'm out of town and then go through them before I recycle them. Once I started cleaning and straightening, I tell myself, who knows if I would ever do anything else. Let's just say that I have been unwilling to take that risk. And once again, I am my mother's daughter. I have never been able to hire help, never been able to stand the idea of strangers in my house touching and cleaning my stuff. I stand or fall by more homegrown assistance.
And Mama. Sheila.
Mama, I'm here, I call. Mama, just in time, Perry answers and comes out of the kitchen to kiss me. Come and kibitz in the kitchen. I'm delighted to join them. Now, I am a person who washes each pot or implement after I use it and puts it away. That way there's no accumulation. Their kitchen has suffered a massive bombardment of dirty pots and cooking utensils. The sink is gone. It has vanished under its contents. Every other surface is in use. Electric machines whip and chop. Larry is at the stove where he is monitoring the baking of six different pies, six different lovely aromas. It is 4 hours to party time. Be quiet, Sheila, I tell myself. Don't make them anxious. They know what they're doing. I don't really believe that in my heart, but I keep quiet.
I just love that. And who doesn't know that kind of back and forth? Sheila Solomon Class and Perry Class reading from Every Mother is a Daughter. Lois is calling from East Lansing, Michigan. Hi, Lois. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi. What do you know?
Well, I hate to be a naysayer, a contrarian, but my experience with my mother was not great. I think I've spent my whole life trying to overcome it, actually. My father was much more nurturing than my mother, and I think sometimes they don't get enough credit for that. Hopefully, my children would agree that I am not at all like my mother.
But you saw your mom as a model to overcome. Sheila, this sounds like it's in your court. You felt somewhat the same.
Yes, the thing that's astonishing to me is how much of what my mother said and repeated is still in my head and is part of me today. That's why I think the title, I love the title, Every Mother is a Daughter, because I am, even though I repudiated, ran away from, moved out of, you know, my mother's influence quite young, I carry what she said and what she taught me in me. And I'm an old lady. It's pretty remarkable that it's all still there, stored there. I don't act on it necessarily the way she did, but it's there.
It's there. Lois has had to push back to find her way. You're still carrying it. I imagine Lois is too. Roberta's calling from Augusta, Georgia. Roberta, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I'm pretty much like Lois. I grew up with a mother that no one wanted as a mother. She was an alcoholic, she was a manic depressive, she was schizophrenic, she was just terrible to be around. And now as an adult, I have children, and I tried to raise them the way I thought a real mother should be. My mother died at 56. Mm. The strange thing is, I'm approaching 56, and I'm starting to see myself as my mother, not as the bad mother, but as the little endearing things that I remember about my mother. I mean, and I just think that's so strange, all these years to try to run away from her, and then in the end, I'm turning into her.
You're softening up on her as you reach the age that she died. What do you find endearing now that you weren't looking at then, Roberta?
Well, she was always on my side. I mean, well, I had an early pregnancy. I was in high school. Everybody stopped talking to me. The church threw me out. But my mom told me to hold my head up high. And just little things like that. I mean, even though she would embarrass me in one sentence, when I really, really needed it, she was behind me.
That sounds
like that's what I've tried to do for my kids.
That sounds like an awfully important moment that she was there for you. Roberta, thanks very much for your call from Augusta. Perry, these calls are making you sound awfully lucky here in your mom. We can hear in her voice and in her... In the history you've written here, how nurturing she was, you could admire her from the get-go.
Well, I was awfully lucky. I am awfully lucky. I'm awfully lucky again now to have had the chance to write a book with her and have the conversations that we didn't usually have. I know more about her. I appreciate her more. You know, you get ritualized as an adult. You have the same conversation over and over again. You have the same argument over and over again. You avoid certain territory because you know you're going to argue. And I think you take each other a little bit for granted. But it is true that I had a mother who was cheering me on and thought most of what I did was great. But I do have to say, we had very difficult years. I was a horrible and impossible adolescent for a long time and blamed her for everything and thought she was impossible and did probably more than my share of eye rolling. Now, of course, this is my perspective now because I'm the mother of adolescents, so I see it from the other side. I don't think it's ever a completely smooth or a completely easy relationship. I don't think anyone is ever exactly happy to make that statement. You know, I think I am my mother. I'm turning into my mother in so many ways. But I listened to that caller and I thought maybe in some ways you're also becoming the mother she never got a chance to be, the person who she could have been if life had been different, if her circumstances had been different, if her character had been a different. Maybe some of the things that never quite got to flower in her are flowering in her daughter.
I wanted to ask both of you about work and family and the mommy wars. Newspaper columnist Ellen Goodman writing about them again today, saying after all this time, this conversation about work and child rearing between women still resembles a food fight more than breakfast in bed as we approach Mother's Day here. You both worked and it seemed to flow fairly naturally into your lives. You don't make much of it. I don't really hear the mommy wars played out in your book. What do you think of that very evident tension that's written about so much in American society today and in women's lives today, Sheila Solomon Class?
Well, it seems to me that because I am older and I worked earlier than many, many women, that is, I left the household, I left small children at home, it seems to me that I was greedy. I knew that I wanted to work. I knew that I wanted to teach so badly. And I didn't realize, I don't think, that it would be quite so difficult, because it is difficult to try to balance everything and to be fair to your children, to the job and so on. Mm-hmm. But I early decided that it was worth all the running for the bus. I don't drive, and we lived in the suburbs, which meant I, you know, rode the public bus to work and from New Jersey into New York. It was complicated and it was hard, and I had a husband who supported my aspirations. I was very lucky, who understood that working was very important to me and mothering was very important to me. So it's a balancing act, and I think it's very personal. Each person has to learn for herself,
Perry,
how to do it.
Yeah, we see that. Perry, what do you think about the current debate where, you know, the sides are more sort of almost battle line drawn, saying you can't do both things?
Well, can I make a sort of hostile, aggressive statement here?
You can make anything you like.
I think there are a lot of people, especially perhaps in the media and maybe especially men who like to see women fight. And I think that's something which is actually in daily life. Almost every woman I know, whatever her life is, understands that it's complicated and you juggle and things change and you balance and you do your best and everybody's life is complicated. Somehow it's pushed publicly into something far more polarized, far more either or than I actually experience in everyday life, with my kids, with school, with my friends. I do think that I had an incredible luxury growing up in that I had a mother who always worked full time, who, after I got out of the house and I wasn't a teenager anymore, I liked her. I knew that if you did it right, you could be somebody who cared tremendously about your career, took it very seriously, worked hard, and your children could grow up and think you were a good mother and be fond of you. So I think that compared to many people my age, I wasn't worried that those two things were incompatible. I knew it was doable. It was just a question of whether I could do it right.
But when it came to it, Sheila, and Perry in her generation saw her kids in quite a bit of daycare, you looked on that with some concern.
Oh, more than concern. I was terrified. But Perry had her first child while she was in medical school, and he was an infant, and she put him in daycare. Daycare did not exist as far as I knew, you know, this kind of all-day daycare. And when I had my third child, who's much younger than Perry and her brother, and I had to leave her with somebody when I went to work at home, not in daycare, but somebody whose job was to stay with her for those hours, my mother-in-law and my mother would telephone me daily in the evening to find out how she had done with the stranger. That was their term. To leave a child with a stranger was to them appalling. And to me, I was really, you know, I wasn't comfortable. So when Perry said she was putting the baby in daycare all day and it was a beautiful infant, I was scared. But my husband also had some reservations, but we never said anything because Perry was a pediatrician.
Sam is calling from Essex Junction, Vermont. Hi, Sam. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. It's Pam, actually.
Pam. Excuse me, Pam.
That's okay. I'm just calling, I guess, you know, from a different perspective because I lost my daughter. It was about a year and a half ago, very sudden, rare complications from mono. But I think because of that, I reflect on my daughter just that much more and maybe differently than I did before. And I learned things about her that I didn't know, and that actually has been really fun. Her friends let slip things that she did in high school that maybe I shouldn't have found out till I was a little bit older. But also, I came to understand that she had become one of the things that was most important to us, and that was that she was really loyal and a really good friend. I had letters and cards from people I didn't even know she knew telling me stories of how she helped them, and that was great.
How old was she, Pam?
She was almost 19.
Wow.
She had just gone to school at McGill University in Montreal.
And you'd just come through the teenage years, so you had to deal with it through all that.
It was one thing I was really grateful for. You know, it sounds odd, but that she had become an age where I really could see her as an adult. And I always wondered, how would my kids turn out, you know?
Yeah.
But she had become an adult, and I really could see, I think, where she was going and thought, okay, you know, she's going to be a good person. You know, she wanted to be a doctor, and I think she would have gotten there. And it's funny that the other thing I reflect on is what I miss and, you know, some of the obvious things like the grandchildren I probably would have had, but things that you only expect from a daughter and you don't even realize you're expecting them, you know, that the wedding, things like that. But being able to talk about women's issues, you know, the discussion about women and working. I had found out that she wanted to be a doctor but was really afraid. She didn't know how to combine that with a family. So, you know, those things are kind of things I miss, and I think it's something when I hear people talk about their daughters or their mothers, you know, critically, I always think, you know, maybe you should sit back and look at things in perspective.
Pam, but you got to glimpse that adult daughter. But what a loss, and we feel it. Sheila, we need your age and wisdom here. What can you say to Pam?
I think it's tragic, but I also think Pam is very lucky in that she has these memories and these thoughts, and that she's not thinking it this way, but I think she must have done a very good job.
We'll second that, Pam, and thank you very much for calling. Perry, there's a moment where you sat and watched your mom at work that made you realize how important that was to her being. I wonder if you could read some of that for us.
Sure. I was watching her teach on a day that her older sister, who she loved very much, was very sick, and it turned out she was dying, and my mother insisted after we had been at the hospital that she wanted to go teach her class, and I went with her. And so I'm watching her teach her students who had written papers for her. They read their pages aloud. She leaned forward and listened, following what the students said, reading their lips, telling them to speak up if she couldn't hear them clearly. She laughed at their jokes and pointed out their successful images, commented on their abilities to build suspense or delineate character. I sat at one of the student desks, leaning on the desk arm of the chair, and I could tell the students were listening. They listened to one another, and they listened to my mother. They could tell that she cared, that she thought their paragraphs were important, and that she was willing to bring everything she had, her hearing, her vision, her brain, and her memory, to bear on their writing and their stories. I watched her up in front of that class, and of course I was in a strange and emotional state myself, but it seemed to me that I was seeing my mother for the first time. This is who she is, I kept thinking. This is who she is. She needed to come and do this for 2 hours so that she can remember who she is. I thought, again with much confused emotion, about the various things that people have suggested to my mother as possible occupations since my father's death. Volunteer work, grief groups, adult education, hobbies. None of that was right. Even the people she loves best, family, children, grandchildren, were only one part of the picture. What she needed really was this. She needed work. She needed to be using herself, all of herself, in this particular way. The class ended. The students were interested and engaged up to the end. She collected the papers they had written, and they wrote down the details of the next assignment. They said goodbye, and several of them lingered to ask questions or go over comments on the papers she had handed back. My mother answered every question, concentrating her hearing, reading their lips. She packed the new set of papers into a folder and packed the folder into her briefcase. She took my arm. She was ready to go back to Brooklyn and say goodbye.
Perry Class, reading from Every Mother is a Daughter, which she wrote with her mom, Sheila Solomon Class, described there at the head of the class, doing what obviously came very naturally to her. Amanda is calling from Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts. Hi, Amanda. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom. Thanks
Hi.
For taking my call.
Yeah, good to have you.
I wanted to take this opportunity to just gush about my mother and
gush
what a
on.
Remarkable woman she is. It's something that I never really understood when I was a kid, and she really put up with a lot for me during my adolescence. But from her, you know, growing up in a single-parent household with two kids, mm-hmm. She worked constantly to support us, and I learned loyalty, sacrifice, dedication, determination, all of which I hope to pass down to my daughter, Teresa, just a real self-reliance, and that if you want something or you want to do something, to go out and do it yourself, because you can't expect the world to deliver it on a platter to you.
And your mom clearly showed that loud and clear. Amanda, thank you very much for that, and good luck passing that on to Teresa.
Thank you. We
got a call from Reading, Massachusetts, and Eileen. Hi, Eileen, you're on the air.
Hello. I just wanted to mention some of the moments that I learned from my mom and defined me as a mom today.
Mm-hmm.
My mom liked to play, and she would do handstands and then walk around the yard on her hands, and we would all try to follow her, and we'd be like a bunch of ducklings.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and then she also would bike ride, and she would sled, and these are all things that I try to do, too, with my son. I don't try to just stand there and say, I can't do this, I'm an adult. I like to do it, too, and I think that helps a lot in your relationship with your children.
Let the play come straight out. It's wonderful, Eileen. Thank you very much for that. Let's get one more call from Amesbury, Massachusetts. Julie's on the air. Hi, Julie.
Hi there, Tom. Yes, I would like to maybe pass on to my daughter something I didn't receive from my mother. And it wasn't her fault. She did the best she could, but we had a very large family, and by the time I came along, she didn't really have much left. And I think there was some depression there. But what I think is most essential, and in my experience with working with other women, a real sense of ego strength and self-worth and honoring, the ability to really honor who you are and not have to live your life according to what other people think you should be or because you want people to like you, but to really honor who you are and the gifts that you have as an individual because your whole life experience is colored by that. And that's something that I am in the process of really passing on to my daughter at this point in life. She's 31, I'm 58. And it took me a long time to get where I am to be kind of emotionally whole and kind of undo what I had missed in my life. And I'm, you know, we only pass on what we have and sometimes what we don't have to the ones we love.
So stand up, and, stand strong, and pass that on. Julie, our time is running down here. I want to turn once more to Sheila, if I may. Sheila, you're listening to all these people call in with stories of their relationships, what they got, what they didn't get. What's it leave you thinking about motherhood?
Well, I think motherhood is glorious. I have all my life, since I can remember, wanted to be a writer, and I thought that was really, you know, going to be the major reward. But it turned out... I realize not to be the major reward. The major reward, and I mean this earnestly, is my children. They are a constant astonishment and often a joy and sometimes trouble, but they are really what I think is what I have derived most from my life.
16 novels for adults and children, and yet you turn to those three children as the big reward. Perry, that's you and the rest of your generation. It must feel pretty good.
It feels wonderful, but I have to say, speaking for her, that the reason she's able to take such joy in us is because she has lived for the things that she loved, because mm-hmm. she is a writer and mm-hmm. she communicated that love of writing to three children who became writers. She's a teacher. All of that came through to us. It's why we are who we are and why she's able to take such pleasure in who we've become.
It's a thoroughly modern and very attractive package. We really appreciate the dialogue between you two and the way you've shared it. Perry Klass, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And Sheila Solomon Klass, wonderful to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
The book is Every Mother is a Daughter, The Never-Ending Quest for Success, Inner Peace, and a Really Clean Kitchen. This is On Point.